This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, bringing you the biggest stories from across Texas. The Headline gives you the news you need to be an informed citizen. Hello, everybody. Happy Friday, and thank you for joining us on The Headline. I'm Brandon Waltons. We're going to be taking a look at some of the biggest stories from across the state this week. And if you're watching live right now, please feel free to drop your comments, questions. Let us know where you're watching from. I'd love to see y'all on there. We're talking vaccine mandates. We're talking the success right now of Texas's Heartbeat Act. And to join me right now to discuss those topics and a couple more is Jacob Asmussen, senior journalist with Texas Scorecard. Jacob, the Texas Heartbeat Act, since it went into effect on the first of the month, has really, really made waves, not just in Texas, right, where it was passed, but we've also seen nationally. And you've really, really seen, more importantly, the left and the pro-abortion mob really attacking Texas right now.
Well, absolutely. Oh, and first, what is the Heartbeat Act? It makes it illegal in Texas for an individual to kill a child in the womb once that child's heartbeat is detected. So essentially it protects children roughly starting around 6 weeks old, though the law notably does not protect children in the first few weeks of their life. But since the law went into effect the 1st of September, we've seen a nationwide onslaught against Texas. You've got businesses, you've got elected officials attacking the state. Most notably, you know, businesses like Uber and Lyft, the ride-sharing companies. Lyft donated $1 million to Planned Parenthood, set up legal funds to fight the law. You have even President Joe Biden's administration attacking the law. The president even called it, quote, un-American. He promised a whole of government effort to retaliate against the law. And then most recently you have the Portland City Council saying they were going to ban the travel and trade with the state of Texas. But then earlier this week they scrapped that idea and instead donated $200,000 of taxpayer money to abortion providers.
Yeah, let's talk about that. You had the city of Portland, right, in Oregon. A lot of people call it the Austin of the Pacific Northwest. You know, that's maybe not a term I coined, but, you know, the Austin of Oregon says they're going to cancel travel and trade with Texas, specifically in protest to this bill. Right. Of course, they get headlines, right? You know, the left saying, look at this, Texas is going to be losing out on all this business from Portland. And it turns out, you know, you kind of look back at, okay, what has the city of Portland, Oregon actually done in terms of business with the state of Texas? And in the past 5 years, it's been just under $35 million, which in the grand scheme of things, not really that much.
Yeah, I mean, they come out with this plan. Oh, we're going to boycott Texas. I think they ran the numbers on it, and they were like, well, maybe this isn't such a good idea. You have Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick tweeting about this. He said, quote, Portland boycotting Texas is a complete joke. A city led by depraved officials allows lawlessness, putting their children, citizens in grave danger. A boycott will hurt them, not us. Texas's economy is stronger than ever. We value babies and police. They don't. And I think that's one of the most notable things in this whole Heartbeat Act fight is one citizen put it best on social media. They said, imagine a world where people are upset about saving babies. And that's really what this is all about. The Heartbeat Act saves children from being killed in the womb, and yet elected officials, businesses across the nation are furious about that.
Well, you saw even one of the Democrat state reps. If people remember the Democrats, right, they fled the state. They fled for Washington, D.C. for almost, I think it was 37 days when all was said and done, earlier this summer to thwart work on the special session. Thwart things like election integrity. Obviously, that issue has already now been passed into law, and we'll talk a little bit about more later. But you had this week one Democrat member who actually received her per diem payment. Okay, lawmakers, regardless of whether or not they're actually there in the Capitol, are entitled to, it's about $250 a day for their, you know, ostensibly to be able to eat and live and that sort of thing in Austin during the session. So she's got about a $10,000 check received from the taxpayers, and she donated it to Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, you know, you have this rep who didn't show up for work for a month and a half, and yet House Republican leadership still sent her a $10,000 check. I mean, imagine if you or I or anyone out there didn't show up to your job for a month and a half. I think we'd have a little bit different of a result than getting a $10,000 check, right? Uh-huh. And so you have questions at House Speaker Dade Phelan, House Republican leadership, because Republicans control the state legislature, right? They could have dictated, they could have enacted penalties on these Democrat lawmakers who fled, who didn't show up for work, and yet they're giving him a $10,000 check, and now that lawmaker took that check, courtesy of the taxpayers, and donated it to a business that kills children.
Yes, I mean, this is Bruce right down here in the comments saying exactly the same thing, that really we did not see any punishment from the Democrats, which kind of led to this domino effect, right, where Speaker Dade Phelan didn't do anything to penalize them for leaving. They get their checks, they haven't been fined, and now at least one member has donated hers to Planned Parenthood in the wake of the Heartbeat Act. But staying on the same subject, talking about the Heartbeat Act, there's been a good, a good sort of, I don't know, side effect, but something else we've seen come out of this, which is that not only have they calculated, I think, thousands of babies now have been saved in Texas, but you've also seen a spike in some of these pregnancy care centers where alternatives to abortion are being discussed. And you actually spoke with somebody who operates a large pregnancy center in Houston about exactly this phenomenon.
Absolutely. I had a wonderful conversation earlier this week with Sylvia Johnson Matthews, the executive director of the Houston Pregnancy Help Center. Now, this is a center that offers life-affirming alternatives to Planned Parenthood. They offer all kinds of free services and support and resources to these women that are in crisis. Sylvia Johnson Matthews said that that is why they exist, is for that woman in crisis, the woman who's in an unplanned pregnancy, considering abortion. They do everything they can to save that child and to help that woman. I mean, they offer free diapers, brand new baby clothes, support for women to continue their education, housing support. They offer support and resources until a child is born and up to 3 years old, right? And so they are, is a wonderful story. And since the Heartbeat Act, they have seen more women. They are helping more women than ever before. Sylvia said that in 1 week after the Heartbeat Act, they did double their normal pregnancy tests and ultrasounds. And so it's wonderful to see that babies are being saved, lives are being saved, women are being supported and encouraged. And so that's one of the beautiful stories amid this onslaught against this law.
Yeah, and even as you see, right, I mean, the left trying to make this issue more, I think, more divisive than it really is amongst amongst the actual citizens of Texas, let alone the country. But of course, they're bringing legal action. Of course, we expect to see stuff out of the courts. But even in these days, and we're now on day 17 of this law being in effect, I think it's really, really impressive to see those tangible results that have come out of this, and even just for those lives that have been saved. I know that you wrote in there, talking with Sylvia, that she's got a number of ways that folks can help if they're so inclined to help with that. And you can check that out in the article. If you're watching on Facebook right now, you can look down in the comments. You can check out Jacob's article at TexasScorecard.com. Switching topics now. Vaccines, okay? It's been a hot topic for months. And we've seen, of course, recently where President Joe Biden has put into place his own vaccine mandates, okay? President Joe Biden comes out, he says that all businesses, all federal employees must have the vaccine. If you're a contractor, you must have the vaccine. If you're an employer that hires 100 or more employees, you have to have the vaccine or test weekly. And, you know, the big point here is that as this has come to Texas and now companies are sort of trying to balance what they're supposed to do right now in Texas specifically, you know, I might sound like a broken record here, Jacob, but I'm just reminded that, again, this is something that the Texas legislature could have prevented, and yet they didn't.
Yeah, well, President Biden's mandate is shocking, of course. completely unconstitutional for him to rule like a king and decree this nationwide mandate for all businesses, mm-hmm. right? Absolutely absurd and unconstitutional. But like you said, the state legislature, the Republican-controlled state legislature, mm-hmm. could have dealt with this issue months ago during their regular session in the spring. They could have passed laws, you know, prohibiting these oppressive mandates, you know, the mask mandates, mm-hmm. the vaccine mandates, all of that, and yet they chose not to. And so the question is why?
And you look at exactly what's on the call. Look, as we're looking at this special session that's starting on Monday, this third special session, if you're keeping track, one of those items is vaccine mandates, but actually the language isn't a ban on vaccine mandates. In fact, it's something to the effect of, can state and local entities mandate vaccines? And if so, what exemptions should apply? Not exactly the kind of vaccine mandate ban that would actually really address any of this that we've seen from the federal government.
Right. And Abbott, seemingly, you know, the question is he surrendering to some of these school mask mandates as well? Mm. Because he did not include that issue on the upcoming special session agenda. You know, it was something that he mentioned in the past, he brought up in past special sessions, but yet, curiously now, mm-hmm. He dropped it from the list of priorities. So, again, why aren't we dealing with this issue? Why aren't they mm-hmm. passing these laws to protect citizens?
Well, if the legislature's not going to act on it, we're not seeing the governor act on this right now. You know, right now, it's kind of been put in the hands of local officials. Now, we've seen this week where Brazoria County Sheriff Bo Stallman says he will not enforce any vaccine mandates. Ellis County commissioners and the county judge passed a resolution specifically opposing Joe Biden's mandate. One of the earliest cities that didn't actually get to vote on this, it wasn't put on the agenda, but you had in Corsicana, where council member Chris Woolsey proposed a resolution that would essentially, not his words, but my words, kind of make the city a vaccine mandate sanctuary city. Mm. At the time he said, the illegal, unconstitutional assault by the federal government on our basic right to security in our person is frightening. And I think you're seeing even more counties now doing this, and certainly some more sheriffs and some more local governments being pressed to fight against this. And you know, maybe this, right? Maybe this is where the last stand has to be.
Right. And it's encouraging to see some local officials across the mm-hmm. state taking this stand to protect citizens' medical privacy and their freedom. But it will be interesting to see when the courts get involved in Texas and on a nationwide mm-hmm. scale, what happens.
Amazing. And like I said, you know, you're looking ahead at this third special session. So it starts on Monday. Mark your calendars, right? Set your alarm. You don't want to miss it. Legislature's going to be back in town. But one of the issues that they're going to be addressing, right, I mentioned the vaccine mandate's kind of a weaker thing. The big issue is going to be redistricting, right? Mm. Drawing those legislative maps ahead of the elections, and that will be in place for the next 10 years. So this is, you know, a big deal. We've got two new U.S. House seats being added as well. But I think the interesting thing, I mentioned this last week, I just kind of want to briefly say this again, is that it's very interesting to me, the items that have been dropped from this agenda. You mm-hmm. mentioned school mask mandates. That was something that was on the second special session mm-hmm. agenda and has been dropped from this third one.
Well, absolutely. And you see other issues curiously absent as well. You know, things like child gender mutilation, mm-hmm. right, which we've written a lot about on the website. You see property tax relief was not on the agenda.
Right.
And raising a big question, even though Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick
yes,
proposed that.
That has been interesting. Last week you had House Speaker Dade Phelan actually sort of signaling that he would like to see property tax relief on the agenda. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick this week released his list of priority legislation, and it includes property tax relief, even though Governor Abbott has not added this to the session yet. I would expect, I think, that the governor probably will. I don't think that the Lieutenant Governor or Speaker Dade Phelan is doing this in a vacuum. The real question is that, okay, he can add issues to the session at any time. Just because he's already laid out his five issues for this session does not mean that they're married to those or that he right. cannot add one in the middle of the session. And the question to me is, what issues are going to be added? Right. You know, where are citizens right going to put pressure right now to say, we want to see you do this especially if this is potentially the last time that the legislature will meet until 2023.
Right. And it's very interesting to see Abbott's list of priorities because, like you said, he only announced a small handful mm-hmm. of priorities that he wants the state legislature to address, mm-hmm. even though there is a myriad of issues across the state right now. Abbott announced just a few, and among his top priorities was one like dog tethering, mm-hmm. right? Even though citizens are getting taxed out of their homes right now, even though children are facing permanent mm-hmm. sterilization and mutilation, mm-hmm. Those weren't on the list, mm-hmm. but dog tethering made the list.
Right.
So like you said, it'll be interesting to see. Citizens need to contact their elected officials if they want to see some of those priorities, mm-hmm. some of those issues included and getting taken care of.
Well, lastly, speaking of gender modification, the race for Texas Attorney General has a new entrant this week in State Representative Matt Krause. The connection there being, of course, that he was the author of legislation that would have banned child gender modification. During the regular session, and you followed that issue closely. Now he's running for Attorney General. It's a field now that includes incumbent Attorney General Ken Paxton. You've got former Supreme Court Justice Eva Guzman, Land Commissioner George P. Bush, and now Matt Krause, state representative, joined that race. But he was the author of that legislation, and yet you've kind of followed exactly how that went through the process, and he wasn't exactly a fighter in pushing it across the finish line.
No, not at all. Earlier this year, State Rep. Matt Krause proposed this legislation to ban insurance providers mm-hmm. from providing these mutilation surgeries on mm-hmm. minors, right? And yet, curiously, Krause complained when other state officials were admonishing the legislature to approve his bill, mm-hmm. right? And so that was very curious to see. Why would you fight against mm-hmm. your own bill? Why would you complain about your own bill getting approved mm-hmm. when this would protect children? And so that raises questions of, what would he do as Attorney General if elected?
Right. It certainly raises questions, although, pretty much everybody in this field right now, I think, raises questions for people, questions that they're going to have to ask the candidates, questions that they're going to have to figure out for themselves. We'll see. Maybe even some more candidates will jump in this race. Why not, right? There's already four. Let's make it eight. Let's make it ten, right? Speaking of elections, we've got a new Autopsy Files podcast up coming up at 2 p.m. today, where I speak with Aaron Anderson, our senior journalist here at Texas Scorecard, about the issue of election integrity, all right? Bringing justice back to Texas elections. Check out a quick clip here.
Of the issues considered during the recent legislative session in Texas, few have been more controversial or compelling than efforts to strengthen election integrity. But even with Democrats fleeing the state to try to thwart Republican efforts and a bit of legislative overtime, major reforms were made this year. I'm Brandon Waltons, and on this installment of the Texas Scorecard Autopsy Files, we take a look at election integrity.
You're listening to The Autopsy Files by Texas Scorecard, a production of 1836 Studios.
Well, it's certainly been one of the most compelling issues of the session, of these special sessions. You're not going to want to miss that. Again, that's going to be up at 2 p.m. at texasscorecard.com, on YouTube, on Facebook, and basically wherever you listen to your podcast, whether it's Spotify, Apple, wherever. You'll be able to find it there. And also next week, give you a little bit of a preview. We're going to be talking taxpayer-funded lobbying. Again, that's an issue that has been a priority for conservatives for a long time. And yet, I'm going to give a little bit of a spoiler here. Not a lot of headway was made this session on banning the practice. But that'll be next week's autopsy report. Also, as a matter of housekeeping, if you have not gotten your tickets already for the Conservative Leader Awards Gala on December 4th in Irving, Texas, please head to our website at texasscorecard.com/CLA2021. The link should be down there in the comments. It's always a great time. Grassroots folks from across the states, conservatives, meeting and honoring some of our leaders, citizen leaders who have been fighting the good fight. And it's always a fun time. Really hope to see a lot of y'all there, but you got to get your tickets first. So go ahead and get those today. And also want to let people know that we're always accepting applications now for our Texas Scorecard Fellowship as we look forward towards the spring, summer, and fall of 2022. make sure if you know somebody between the ages of 18 to 25 who'd be interested in spending some time with us here at Texas Scorecard, learning the ropes, forward that application on to them. Let them know. We'd love to talk to them. I want to thank everybody watching the show today. A few shout outs down here in the comments. We got Courtney watching from Stafford, Bruce tuning in from Carmine, Justin in Rhode Island. I don't know where in Texas that is. I need to pull out the map. Amazing to see somebody watching from not Texas. If you have any questions, if you're watching this later, please feel free to drop them down in the comments. Again, remember, the third special session starts Monday. We're going to have all the coverage of that at texasscorecard.com. But for now, thank you for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week. So check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. While you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.